I think you find that when you establish a company and you lead it, you're learning something new every single day. And that's actually a lesson in of itself.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast.
Hi, and welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. In today's episode, we'll explore how associations can live their core values that drive an organization's culture, decision-making, and long-term success. Our guest today is David Murillo, who is the president and CEO of Compass Management Solutions, an association management company that specializes in guiding boards of directors. Throughout his career, David has focused on transforming an association's value proposition into mission-aligned strategies. We'll discuss what this process looks like and how David ensures an organization stays true to its core values. We'll also talk about innovative ways to plan for an organization's future without relying on recycled yearly planning. This conversation is packed with actionable advice and insights, and I know you'll get as much out of it as I did. So let's get started. David, welcome to the Association Advisor Podcast. It's great to have you as a guest today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
You know, I always like to start our episodes by letting the audience and our listeners learn about your journey into the association world and what initially drew you to association management. So can you share your story with us?
Sure. I think as I can imagine is the case with numerous people in this industry and association management, it really was a fortuitous event. In my case, it was a conversation over lunch with an old high school and college friend that proved really consequential in my journey in this industry. So I studied business in college and specifically HR and insurance within business. And I'd been working in the insurance industry for a few years out of school, and I'd really come to the conclusion that my passions led outside of that world, but I hadn't quite decided what I was going to do about it. So as it was, while I was working for that insurance company, I had a coworker who was interested in the world of graphic design. And a good friend from high school and college was in that profession, had just graduated recently. So I arranged a lunch for the three of us to talk about it. And it was during that lunch that my buddy told me that his employer, which was an association, was looking for someone to join the membership team at his group, and preferably somebody who had some insurance knowledge. The insurance program for that particular association, as in many others, was a huge value proposition to its membership. So I wound up interviewing, I got the job, and I never left the association world after that.
That's amazing. And let's talk about today. So you're the leader of Compass Management Solutions that you found. So tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll get into your leadership there.
Sure. Yeah. I worked in the association membership realm directly for associations for a few years and moved up to the executive director level and eventually transitioned into the world of AMCs, association management companies, initially as an employee and then later now as a principal. So that's kind of how the journey went a little bit there. And as far as things that you've learned along the way, and I think you find that when you establish a company and you lead it, you're learning something new every single day. And that's actually a lesson in of itself.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I find in leading a company and being in that position is that you have to navigate, I think, through the dynamic of being confident in the vision that you have while also being aware of your blind spots, right? I think you learn to surround yourself with really bright and driven people. And I certainly have done that with our staff and my business partners. Sometimes folks that don't always think like you, but that share the same basic fundamental values. That's hugely important. And I'm talking about values like ethics, professionalism, resourcefulness, self-awareness, and empathy.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. It's interesting because when you said, you know, the blind spots that you may have, right? I love using sports analogies, so forgive me. But like, if you think about the quarterback, there's a blind spot and they have somebody protecting that blind spot for them, right? And I think that's one of the things as directors, CEOs, is you have to understand that you have your vision, but there's so much going on around you. So I think having a good team to help with that is great. So in addition, though, to leadership of your own company, you also have sat on several boards as chair of the board for the California Society of Association Executives. Tell us a little bit about how that experience is and how that might be a little different from leadership versus board work.
I think it's important to say this first off, and that is if you're an association staff member, especially in the executive realm, and you're routinely asking for your members to volunteer their time, I think it's important that you're prepared and seek the opportunities to do it yourself. One, you model the behavior that you wish your members to exhibit. But I think you also understand the volunteering process much better when you sit on the other side of it. It gives you the user perspective, and you learn how to manage the volunteer experience better. And that includes things like understanding the importance of having clarity of roles, managing expectations, recognition, effective engagement. I think that experience of being a volunteer yourself and serving on a board or a committee or even, you know, selling raffle tickets at a conference, I think it makes you a better association professional overall.
It's an excellent point because often we ask a lot of those who work for us with us volunteer, but you're right. You have to put yourself in the seat of what they do to understand what that ask is and what it looks like. And I do agree that leaders that also roll up the sleeves and do the doing can better appreciate what that experience is like and what you're asking someone to do. So I love that philosophy. And I love that you set that standard for yourself as well.
Yeah, and I think especially as a board member, one of the other things that you learn is to really understand the importance of you as a board member, knowing your organization's strategic plan and your role in it. You also learn how to appreciate, because everybody's time is so valuable, right? You also learn to appreciate the importance of deliberate and effective meeting agendas that really make good use of your time. And then as a staff member, you can translate that experience into better executive leadership.
Yeah, no. And, you know, one thing you touched on earlier in the answer to this question, too, you made the statement about managing the board. I think that's also equally important, is that when you're working with boards, you have to understand how to manage the board too, as well as the organization and the people you lead. And I do think that is a whole different challenge in and of itself. So I love that you have experience on both sides of the table on that. That's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, when you approach the work you do, you begin with understanding and analyzing the group's core value proposition. Let's talk about what those steps are that you take to uncover what those are and how to define what that is as you go forward.
Yeah, I think you hit the first step on the head when you used the word defining. I think most people in our profession have a pretty basic understanding of what an organization's value proposition is, but there is nuance in it that's really important. So, for example, when you're talking about a paying membership, a key definition of a value proposition can actually be pretty simple, and that is, what does a member receive in return for every dollar they spend on dues, right? This distinction, I think, is really important because there are association folks out there who, when ask that question, what's the organization's value proposition? They usually start citing examples of programmatic activity, like the annual conference, the webinars, other education. And these are of absolute value to the industry, for sure. But if these offerings are available to non-members, then from a membership perspective, they're not part of the value proposition per se, if that makes sense. Because if there's a pricing differential, say, between members and non-members that you get if you join, then it's the discount that's the value proposition, if we're talking about what a member receives in return for dues, right? So I think the definition and being clear about what type of value proposition you're talking about is really important. I think another key factor in determining an organization's value proposition is understanding that more often than not, it is not going to be uniform across your various membership segments. So most notably, you can say between your primary members, quote unquote, and a vendor membership category. So if we're talking about a professional society, the value proposition of your membership is going to be inherently different between practitioners and the vendors, right? Because practitioners may see access or discounts to continuing ed, community among professional peers, those types of things as a value proposition, where the vendor may see some of that, but their value proposition is going to be access to those practitioners. if you continue that example, even within the practitioner ranks, you're likely going to see areas of value vary, say in a professional society between career stage, geography. So that concept of member value segmentation is an exercise that's really important in my view.
Well, you did a great job, David, of outlining the definition, and you're right. Like, value can mean different things to different parts of the membership and the ecosystem around that. So then how do you go from, you've defined that value position, now what do we do about converting that into action and strategy and your leadership guide to this process?
Yeah, I think part of what you do with that, what you use that value proposition and segmentation analysis process is you wind up determining who you are to whom within your membership. So for a particular membership segment, you may find that you're primarily an education provider. For another segment, you may be a vehicle for change in the legislative sphere through advocacy. However you wind up segmenting your membership, you then determine whether your programs are still relevant. You determine whether there is an opportunity for new programs based on the feedback you receive. I think another key part of it is that you look at how you're communicating that value to the various segments, understanding what is it that they see the most important and valuable aspects of your group.
That's great. No, thank you for sharing that. You know, in the beginning, when we talked about your journey and some of your experience, it's pretty easy to see and hear what some of your strengths are as a leader. But I'd love for you to tell us, how do you incorporate, or what do you feel your strengths are and how you incorporate that into your decision-making and day-to-day work?
I'll start off by saying I'm a huge fan of the StrengthsFinders process. If you haven't looked into that, it's a process through Gallup.
I have not. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it is a questionnaire that you take. Gallup puts it out, and it is a questionnaire of 100 and some questions. It takes maybe about a half hour to complete, and it spits out what your top five, or if you do the extended program, what your top 34 strengths are. And in my case, it's kind of had a strategic type of, yeah. It kind of has that theme. But I find that for me, my job, the ones that I find help me the most are empathy, relatability, vision, and that big picture perspective, which goes with that strategy. And on a daily basis, I would say it's the empathy. And I do want to clarify that when I say empathy, I mean that as more of a term of an exercise versus being sentimental, because I think folks sometimes think of empathy as being sentimental or, you know, that type of relatability to somebody. But I think it's important as a leader that you put yourself in the shoes of whatever professional constituent you're dealing with, whether it's an employee, a client, a partner, and be purposeful to empathize with that individual's perspective before you act or even talk, and especially when there may not be a particular fondness of said individual, because we're humans, right? We have varying degrees of how we connect with folks, because I think that can blind you. So I think in that sense, the empathetic exercise is more a matter of thinking, actually, than it is emotion.
This is so great. And I want to touch base on a few of the things you made. So first of all, I love, love, love that you have a data-driven approach to defining your strengths, and you just don't wake up and say, this is what I think. So I love the exercise of defining your strengths in the process through Gallup. So thank you for sharing that. I think the whole understanding of empathy, of all the conversations, because let's face it, as a CEO, fellow leaders, it's one of the number one skills leaders have to have today that you didn't even hear us talk about. You just did the best job of articulating it. It doesn't mean that it's all about emotion and things like that. It's about putting yourself in the shoes, as you described, as a board member. You do the volunteering, right? It's like, how do you have empathy for a volunteer? Well, what is it like to walk in their shoes? How do you have empathy for a client? How do you have empathy for an employee? It's so many different things. And I think it's misunderstood. And sometimes when you start off with that as a statement, people immediately associate it as this whole, I hate to say it, but people think of it as a weakness, and it's not at all. And thank you for clarifying that. I think that that's so important, and the way you defined it is spot on.
Oh, I appreciate that. I imagine, like, with so many different concepts, folks have a different definition of empathy, and it may be different for different people. It's super helpful when you do that exercise, because it helps you also anticipate needs and get ahead of things. If you sit in the seat of a board member, you ask yourself, say, when you're preparing an agenda or you're preparing something for a board meeting, what would I, if I were on that seat, which the previous experience and serving ties into that, if I'm in that seat, what would I expect from this meeting? What do I want out of it? Hey, I want to know that I spent my time wisely. I want to know that I'm making a difference in this association and I'm not wasting my time. I want to understand what this organization's strategic plan is and what's my role in it, right? And that's part of the empathetic stuff. And by the way, it also goes to the detail. I want to, you know, if I'm a board member, I want to be in a room where the temperature is decent, so I'm not worrying about how hot I am or cold I am, and I'm making good decisions.
Yeah.
All the way from detail to the big picture, I think the empathetic exercise can be really valuable.
I'm laughing because I remember I was sitting in a board meeting once and the temperature thing kept coming up. And then somebody remarked, geez, Christine, you're really obsessed with it. I'm surprised it's not going to come up in the board minutes. But there was a reason, right? Because you know how distracted it is. Usually you're not having soft conversations in the board meetings. And it's like the last thing you need is agitation in the room. So, but yeah, I appreciate that. But you're right. I think you did a great job. Now, we talked a lot about your journey, your leadership, your style, what works, what doesn't, strength finding. Let's talk about the future a little bit. So tell me, David, what you see as some of the biggest challenges, but also opportunities for the association space and leaders in the next couple of years.
Yeah, as far as challenges, I think to an extent, that's going to depend on what industry your association lives in. For example, if you're in certain trade association spheres, industry conglomeration is a living and breathing challenge right now. You've got, in some industries, big members swallowing up smaller ones, purchasing them through M&A activity. That's leading to a lesser dues base and a higher dependency of some of those larger members. You're an organization that's needing to balance the value proposition of members of varying sizes, understanding you have a finite amount of resources by which to do it. You know, we've seen that dynamic play out in some of our own groups in our AMC. I would say another more general challenge for membership organizations is what seems to be the, I guess I'd call it the increasing transactional nature of the membership base. People and organizations seem to be being much more judicious with how they spend their dollars and wanting to see a demonstrable return on investment, maybe now more than in years past. You know, in years past, we're joining an association for the common good of an industry or profession. Used to be good enough to push the join button, right? Maybe not so much anymore. And this is putting a lot of pressure on organizations to demonstrate value in a marketplace where they have to compete for attention.
I like that sort of as a litmus test is like, are you good enough to hit the join button? I love that. Like, what is your association saying about you? Like, do you make it like people want to join? That's fantastic.
And on the challenge front, one thing I would be remiss if I didn't mention is the technological challenges that associations out there, like many other groups, are trying to figure out. For example, how to adopt AI into their operations with limited funding as a nonprofit, right? And deal with all the legal and ethical considerations that go along with that in real time. And I would include in that area, competition with open source models for education where people can get their stuff for free or, you know, access it in different ways. And we all know that education can be a key revenue component to groups. So that's certainly a challenge.
You're right. AI comes up on every conversation I've had and that we have with our association clients as well. So spot on that.
That's a great segue because I think that there is that old adage, right? That with every challenge comes opportunity, and that holds true in our industry. You know, we're talking about when we were kind of following up on the conversation we were just having, there is an opportunity for associations to invest in the training for this new technology. And to your point, they can use it to become more efficient and leverage the technology in a member value. So while there is a challenge, there's certainly an opportunity. Another one I'd say is, you know, you've seen there seems to be much more of a tendency to do online education, perhaps a little bit more than in person. And for groups, this can actually translate into increased markets for associations that were previously limited by geographical considerations in the past, right? When they were doing a lot more in person, folks maybe couldn't attend a conference or couldn't attend education because it was cost prohibitive. Now in this world, online education can increase some markets for some groups. And finally, I'd say in the area of DEI, there is certainly opportunity to create engagement strategies for your underrepresented groups and ensure that the organization is remaining relevant as the makeup of our population continues to change. You know, I would say that stagnation in the area, this area, in my opinion, is not a formula for success, especially in the long term. Because if you're not providing that value and engagement to changing, evolving demographics, someone else is going to do it for you.
I agree with that sentiment because you have to ask yourself, does your membership composition today make up what it needs to look like for tomorrow? How do you incorporate that into your strategy and your membership base? So I think it's an important topic. So thank you for sharing that. I agree too that every challenge creates opportunities and even sometimes there's opportunities that have nothing to do with the challenges, but we should always have a mind out for what those are. So thanks for sharing that. You know, on this podcast, we get a lot of advice from leaders like you, and I always like walk away with so much learning. But I want to ask you this. If you think about your career journey, is there ever a time you can reflect on where you've received advice from someone and that it's had a direct impact on your leadership journey?
Yeah, I think for me, the concept and advice I've received is to know thyself. And it's been a mantra that has served me well for many years. And it actually took me a long time to figure it out. This goes back to what we might have talked about a little earlier, empathy and all that, which goes hand in hand with self-awareness, right? I think knowing your strengths and finding ways to leverage them in the most positive way possible in what you do is hugely important, but so is your blind spot. Knowing things that trigger you, being aware of how you can come across to others, and in turn, being deliberate about how you want to come across. This in turn can inform what you say, when you say it, and perhaps most importantly, when you don't say anything at all.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's the deadliness of silence, right?
Yeah. Well, and I'd say also in this concept is included having a policy of being brutally honest with yourself and not in a destructive mode, but rather with the intent of always wanting to be clear-minded about your intention and your perspective. So, you know, for me now, when I look at others' leaders, self-awareness becomes a litmus test for me. And you can see it pretty quickly when you engage with a leader, whether that is there.
Yeah, no, and I do think it's important. It's again, going hand in hand with empathy to your point, right? As leaders today, we need to show up differently. And I think understanding how you're viewed and how you come across is so important. And I will tell you, David, I was at a conference last week with one of the groups that presented was the Blue Angels, John Foley, right? One of the Blue Angels, which one of the most ego-driven jobs in the world. But what they do is they do a debrief. And, you know, it's check your ego at the door and bring some humility, because even if you're at the top of your game, you're human and mistakes can happen or things can happen. And they, in the debriefing room, they each come with their own accountability. And the other thing too that I've done is I do, you know, surveys. And sometimes it's painful to read, you know, but you have to be willing to put yourself out there to take a look, because the only way you can make change is to have that awareness and some honesty, some humility, and some willingness to just make some changes, I think is great. That's huge advice. So I'm glad you received it and I'm glad you still practice that, because I do think that's important. So we learned a lot. And as we do with all of our episode guests, we ask about their reading and what they recommend. I am telling you, David, my bookshelf has really grown, because usually I almost order every single book that's been recommended. There's been a few I've already been aware of, but just the other day I got a new one in. And so I'm eager to hear what you would recommend.
Yeah, I would actually recommend reading the book. It's called The Four Agreements. And it's
love that book.
Miguel Ruiz, right? Yeah. It may have been one of the other ones that some of your guests talked about. It's about 150 pages. It's not super long. You can read it on a longer flight or, you know, on an evening that you have free. Yeah, it can be considered, I guess, to some extent, self-help, but it's got some really great advice that you can absolutely apply to your professional life. And it's an entertaining read, you know, with stories and anecdotes and stuff. And it's got the name of it is The Four Agreements. So there's at least four great pieces of advice that the author goes into, and all of which I think can absolutely be leveraged into being a better leader. And yeah, I'd say a better person. Not the easiest things to adhere to at times, but definitely a great conceptual book.
You know, I will say that's not been recommended in this series. However, I read it years ago. You just reminded me. I remember what it did for me then. And it's one of those things that never gets old. And sometimes it's good to reacquaint yourself, because as you know, our journeys evolve and we evolve as people. What I love about what you said, though, this isn't your traditional leadership book, but we have to acknowledge we're all people at the end of the day. Right. And the most important aspect is how you show up as a human being. And you have to be willing to put leadership values and human values together to have the best outcome, I think, in a leadership journey. So
I think it goes great with self-awareness. And, you know, he talks a little bit about how you think the world sees you. And I think it's a fantastic expenditure of time.
I agree. I highly endorse that. So let's hope a lot more people log on and grab that book from Amazon ahead of the holidays. So, David, this has been a wonderful episode. Really great insights that you left us with and our listeners. So I thank you for that. And we wish you speedy recovery and healing to 100%.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful talking to you.
You too. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. If you'd like to access more resources to serve your association needs or join our newsletter, you can visit our website at naylor.com or just click the links in the show notes of this episode. Please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast listening app, like Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you won't miss an episode. Also, I'd love to hear from my listeners directly. Feel free to email me at christine.shaw@naylor.com. Until next time, we at Naylor are wishing your association success.